am Femi Oke. You're watching the stream. The calls for British Prime Minister Boris Johnson to step down are getting louder. Revelations about a series of government officials holding parties could be the downfall of the Prime Minister. YouTube is open. Join our conversation on YouTube. Could Partygate finish Boris Johnson? That is the question. I will do my best to get your analysis into today's show.
Boris Johnson may still be able to survive a current political storm, but that doesn't mean that his support, the authority and the leadership that he had within the Conservative Party will remain the same.
There'll be a lot of Conservative MPs who, speaking to their constituents, and think that actually perhaps their seats are in danger as a result of this. If there's more allegations down the line, if the report that's coming out finds Boris Johnson to be guilty of any wrongdoing, then I do think we could see the Prime Minister either resigning or forced to resign by his own MPs.
Let's meet your panel. Hello, Ash. Hello, Tom. Hello, Niamh. Really good to have all three of you with us today. Some quality punditry, audience. Stand by for that. Ash, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our global audience.
Hi, I'm Ash Sarkar. I'm contributing editor for Navarra Media, and I'm based right here in London.
Nice to have you. Tom, it's been a while since we had you on the stream. Welcome back. Remind our audience who you are, what you do.
Yeah, hi, my name's Tom Harwood. I'm the political correspondent for GB News, a TV channel here in the UK.
Nice to have you. And hello, Niamh. If you've been watching Al Jazeera News, you know exactly who Niamh is. If you haven't, Niamh is about to tell you. Welcome.
I am Niamh Barker, Al Jazeera's presenter and correspondent, based in our European Broadcast Centre here in London.
All right, guess. Let's start with David Davis. He's a Conservative MP, a former minister. This is what he said on Wednesday during Question Time. Have a listen, have a look.
Mr. Speaker, like many on these benches, I spent weeks and months defending the Prime Minister against often angry constituents. I reminded them of his success in delivering Brexit and on the vaccine and many other things. But I expect my leaders to shoulder the responsibility for the actions they take. Yesterday, he did the opposite of that. So I'll remind him of a quotation altogether too familiar to him of Leo Amery to Neville Chamberlain. You have sat there too long for all the good you have done. In the name of God, go.
Tom, what do you make of that? So direct, not sitting on the fence.
So direct and so historic. The words of Leo Amery in 1940 brought about the downfall of Neville Chamberlain, bringing about Winston Churchill's time as Prime Minister. That was an event that happened in the House of Commons. And indeed, that itself was a quote of a former Lord Protector of England, Oliver Cromwell, who dismissed one of his parliaments with the words, "In the name of God, go." So really evoking a hundreds of years old tradition within Parliament, a really quite powerful statement, and one that was punctuating an interesting Prime Minister's questions. Because, of course, this Prime Minister's question time, where the Prime Minister walked in only 5 minutes beforehand, a member of Parliament had defected from the Conservative Party to the opposition party, to the Labour Party. This had a really interesting effect in the mood of the chamber. To some extent, it united a lot of the MPs behind Boris Johnson, who might not have been so effusive in their support of Boris Johnson just a few hours earlier. They saw, in effect, who their real enemy was. So this intervention from David Davis, a former cabinet minister, a senior backbench Conservative MP, seemed a little bit out of whack with what the rest of the Conservatives seemed to be doing, which was rallying around Boris Johnson to a greater degree than they were doing even just a few hours beforehand.
Ash, I'm just going to play this moment where Conservative MP crossed the floor into the Labour ranks. Here you can see it here. Christian Wakeford. I am wondering what you made of Boris Johnson's demeanour, how he is handling himself under pressure, Ash.
Boris Johnson is usually somebody who comes across as optimistic, bounding, absolutely fizzing with energy, and usually looks like the kind of politician who confirm almost any lie with a little bit of a smirk and a hint of, well, this is all very silly. That demeanour has almost completely evaporated this week. We have seen a Boris Johnson who looks, I think, genuinely quite shaken, because his grip on the Conservative Party, which looked absolutely unbreakable after delivering that landslide in the 2019 general election, is now looking weaker by the day. The significance of this MP, Christian Wakeford, crossing the floor really can't be overstated. What this shows is that the mutiny in Boris Johnson's party is really coming from all sides. You have David Davis, who's known as what, you know, he's known as a grandee, which means an older figure, someone with seniority, someone who is seen to sort of lead newer MPs through Parliament, show them what's what. And then you've got Christian Wakeford, who is a new intake MP. He won his seat from Labour on a very slim majority of only 400 votes in 2019. And he's the first to see, hang on, I could lose my lovely £80,000 a year job in the next general election. I've got to do something. I've got to put distance between myself and a prime minister who the entire nation is angry at. And I've also got to side with a party who could be winning that seat again in the next general election.
Neil, it's hard to believe this has all come from a series of parties, and not even necessarily recent parties, parties from months ago.
Yeah, I mean, over the last week, nearly day by day, we've been hearing more and more about the breaking of rules, allegedly, by staff under Boris Johnson, parties that may have taken place at 10 Downing Street or indeed other government departments. If we thought it was bad enough with Boris Johnson last Wednesday having to apologise for attending a garden party at his official residence in Number 10, well, since then, we've heard about double leaving dues at 10 Downing Street, where officials may have been sent down to supermarkets to buy more booze, of DJs being hired, of parties happening on the eve of the funeral of the Duke of Edinburgh when the country was in national mourning. It has been really quite astonishing. Boris Johnson quite sullen on Monday during interviews, but I think in Parliament today, the Tiggerish Johnson was back doing his best to deflect attention away from all of these allegations swirling around him.
Niamh, when you told your Twitter followers that you were going to be on today's programme and what the discussion was, Lutu Henry said this on Twitter. He should step down. This is Boris Johnson, because it's dishonourable not to lead by example. The concept of Boris Johnson actually resigning himself without being pushed. Niamh, could you even imagine that would happen?
No, quite simply, no. This is a man who is a political survivor. He's a Teflon politician, a man who has made it very much a part of his political career to skirt around controversy, to get people on side, to cajole and convince where possible. The idea that he should wholeheartedly admit defeat and fall on his sword seems almost unthinkable right now. This appears, at this particular moment in time, to be a man who will fight this to the bitter end.
Just looking at some more thoughts here on Twitter. Alex, he needs to go. The lies have piled up too high, not to forget the horror story that is the COVID response, let alone Brexit. One more tweet here from Seven Tech. I think it would be best for him to resign before he is forced to go. Ash, what is the feeling in the UK about Boris Johnson resigning? I'm looking at some polls and his popularity has gone so far down. It's even below Theresa May's, who was below 50% of favourability. What's the public thinking?
Well, you make a very good point there, Femi, which is the polls tell their own story, which is that Labour are riding high, the Conservatives are hemorrhaging support, and most worryingly of all, they are absolutely getting a drubbing in those red wall seats, those northern and midland seats which they won off Labour in 2019. And it's making lots of Conservative MPs worry about their own, the future of their own careers, and of course the future of the Conservatives' parliamentary majority. The other thing to keep an eye on is, of course, what's coming up in focus groups, because the mood has really turned against Boris Johnson. There have been focus groups being run by people such as, you know, former Downing Street data analysts. What's being said is that he's a liar, he's a chancer, he can't be trusted. And more than that, the Conservative Party is being diminished by its continued association with Prime Minister Boris Johnson. So these are the kinds of mood changes which could get more MPs writing letters into what's called the 1922 Committee, which is how you trigger a challenge to a Conservative Party leader. You write to a guy called Graham Brady. You can also rescind letters. Don't really know why this is like an organised secret Santa. Seems to be there could be a more efficient way of doing this whole thing. Anyway, this is the kind of thing which could turn MPs against Boris Johnson. But as we've seen today, they're a fickle bun. Christian Wakeford crossing the floor could remind them that actually the real enemy is Labour. Boris Johnson could tough it out. No one else is electorally tested. I think it's very febrile, very dumb.
It's certainly incredibly febrile at the moment, although I think it's worth looking at the polls as they stand now in the context of where we are. And we are, of course, in the middle of a parliamentary term. Parliamentary terms in the UK can last up to 5 years. We're just over 2 years into this one. It's very ordinary at this stage in a political cycle for the governing party to be behind in the polls. If we think back to David Cameron, in 2013, he was 15 points behind the Labour Party in 2013. 2 years later, he won a general election. If we think back to Margaret Thatcher, she was double digits behind the Labour Party during the Westland affair of 1986. A year later, she won an enormous parliamentary majority. Whilst it's true and absolutely undeniable that the Conservative Party is absolutely tanking in the polls right now, It's not actually that out of line from where we'd expect to see a mid-term parliament. Indeed, if we look even at Tony Blair's ratings in around 2001 during the oil crisis, during the fuel crisis, and foot and mouth and all of that, the Conservative Party was ahead. And then Tony Blair, of course, went to win on another election. So really, we need to look at this in the round, in the sort of context of the parliamentary term that we're seeing. And it's interesting to see that so many new MPs who potentially don't have as much time looking over their history of politics are those that are trying to make the first moves.
But I'd like to jump in here, Tom, because it might not be that they are just, you know, ignorant of Conservative Party history. It might be that they've actually got a closer eye on their majority. So you do have these new intake MPs which have much slimmer majorities than Conservative Party MPs in safety. And they're thinking to themselves, how stable is this electoral coalition that got put together in 2019? Are we out of that period of volatility, which really began in 2016? You had 2017, Theresa May losing her majority. You then had 2019, a Conservative Party landslide. There are an awful lot of MPs in those northern and midland seats going, that same electorate which turned on a dime and delivered me my lovely job, they could turn on me again.
Mm. And yet you see this attitude. Go ahead.
So I want to bring in...
Just wondering, going forward, if there was an election tomorrow, whether these people dismayed with the Conservative Party that they gave their vote to for the first time in these red wall seats, we're talking about areas of the country, largely in the north of England, that traditionally voted Labour, that switched allegiance to the Conservative Party, whether these people would actually go ahead and switch their allegiance back, or whether these polls simply show a reactionary response in the midst of a crisis. How trusting should we be of these numbers right now?
So, Niamh, I'm just going to push on a little bit. I know that you've been reporting on some of the scandals that have hit the Tory party, the Conservatives, over a number of years. But after Boris Johnson was off the scene for a few days because a family member had COVID, he came back and he had an interview. That was on January the 18th. And in this interview, he was asked about having a party in Downing Street the eve of the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral, and he looked extremely contrite. Let's take a look.
This is important. This is the first time we've seen you since reports emerged in the Daily Telegraph, not denied by Downing Street, about two boozy parties held in the garden, in the buildings of Number 10, the night before Prince Philip's funeral, when the country was in national mourning. Was having to apologise to the Queen about those parties the night before she put her husband of over 70 years, she laid him to rest. Was that a moment of shame for you?
I deeply and bitterly regret that happened, and I can only and renew my apologies both to Her Majesty and to the country for misjudgments that were made and for which I take full responsibility.
Do you think you,
Niamh, there have been so many scandals surrounding Boris Johnson, the cabinet, Tory MPs. Why is this one different? Is it different?
Well, judging by his facial expressions during that interview, even behind the mask, this was a man that seemed browbeaten, almost defeated after days, weeks of continual calls from opposition MPs to come clean on exactly what the Prime Minister did know or didn't know, what kind of culture he presided over at Downing Street. He had appeared exhausted, and that's after having several days away from cameras, isolating with a family member. It does raise big questions about how much longer Boris Johnson can really last. But saying that, only 24 hours later, he was up in Parliament, his tiggerish old self, batting criticism away left, right and centre, reframing the argument back on his achievements, on how the government has handled the pandemic over the past 700 days. On the one hand, he appears contrite. On the other hand, he appears as if he's got all to play for. He's a man that has treated in many ways politics like a game throughout his career, and this is one he's determined to play well to the last, by the looks of it.
It's really important to note here just how quickly things have changed over the last few days. If we were having this conversation last night, I think that everyone here would agree that we were thinking that Boris Johnson was about to be brought down in a matter of hours. Yet having this conversation tonight, it seems that he's safe at least until next week. And really, we're seeing such quick turns in the fortunes of what is going on, and indeed in the attitude. Many Conservative MPs, upon seeing that pool interview with the Prime Minister on Monday, were really quite irritated by his performance and thought, to some extent, it was a performance. You know, the sort of sighing, the head down, as if it was rehearsed, as if this,
Tom, do you think it's, do, Tom, do, within do you think do you think that was a performance?
I think he would definitely have gamed those questions with his advisers. There's no way that he would have spent so many days inside Number 10 before having his first broadcast interview and not have thought about those questions. Because, of course, that story of advisers having a party, it has to be said that the Prime Minister was 40 miles away in his country retreat at the time that these parties before Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral, took place, ahead. They happened while he was Prime Minister, and that obviously has been a big bone of contention.
I think you're touching on something really important here, Tom, which is we've talked about the Conservative Party MPs, we've talked about Conservative voters, and I think it's really important for us to talk about the media landscape as well, because Boris Johnson in many ways is a creature of the British media. He started out as a journalist. He was employed by The Telegraph as a star columnist on £250,000 a year. He is somebody who has enjoyed very closely to the British media. And in some ways, these two institutions have fed on each other. So don't look at the progressive, left-leaning, liberal paper. Look at what's being said in the Mail, in the Times, and in particular, the Telegraph. Because it was the Telegraph, Boris Johnson's own former employer, which broke the story about the Downing Street party on the eve of Prince Philip's funeral. Now, this is important because they have been the Prime Minister's most reliable backers amongst the British newspapers. So for there to be such a dramatic shift in tone and indeed such an aggressive and hostile story for the Prime Minister, he's going to be looking over his shoulder, asking himself, well, how much can I rely on my MPs? How much can I rely on my ministers, some of whom may have their own ambitions take my job? And also,
I think
how
this
much
might be a little
rely
bit of a
on my media
view of the British media here. The Telegraph,
I mean, wasn't he employed by them?
The Telegraph's political correspondent, Tony Diver, is an excellent journalist, got a very good story and ran it on their front page. I don't really think there's more to it than that. They found a good scoop and, like any good journalist, ran that good scoop. I don't think that there's any newspaper in the United Kingdom apart from BBC.
Tom and Ash, can I just ask you this? Because I did promise our audience that they could be part of the conversation as well. So Atul is wondering, why are they, media, leakers, bringing this story after almost a year? Quick thoughts, Tom. Quick thoughts, Ash. Literally quick, in a sentence. Tom, you go first.
I think they fundamentally didn't have their hands on it until now. We know that a number of people have left Downing Street. People who used to work at Downing Street have left over the last 12 months. And potentially, okay, these sources are being more loose-lipped now than they were 12 months ago.
Okay. There were 100 people invited to that Downing Street party. That's more people than I'm going to invite to my 30th this year. Secondly, one of the parties was held as a leaving drink for James Slack, who was Director of Communications at Downing Street. What was his next job? It was Deputy Editor of The Sun, one of the biggest newspapers in the country.
All right, Ash, make the point in the sentence.
News the media didn't know is frankly risible.
All right, Niamh, so what the British Prime Minister is saying right now is let's wait for the inquiry. Can you remind us what this inquiry is and when will we find out about its findings?
Yeah, well, we're hoping that we'll find out the ins and outs of this inquiry within the coming days, although Sue Gray, who's the top civil servant tasked with doing the inquiry, is clearly getting more and more information dumped in her inbox, which may be contributing to the length of time that this inquiry is going on for. She's a woman who was nicknamed as the sleaze buster of Whitehall. She's been responsible for the departure of some quite senior MPs in the past, and she's tasked, not in a judicial way, but in a fact-finding way, to explore and investigate wrongdoings in Downing Street, other government departments, and look into these parties with greater detail and see also, crucially for the public, what kind of role Boris Johnson may have played in all of this.
I love this question on YouTube because it's what we're all thinking, but we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But Bunston, you're there. You're there with this YouTube question. I'm going to put it to Ash and then also to Tom. I do think the country is in lazy love relationship with the Conservatives. So the question is really, who will they replace Boris Johnson with? That's assuming that Boris Johnson is on his way out. Ash, you start.
Well, there are two clear contenders, which is Finance Minister Rishi Sunak and Foreign Minister Liz Truss. Both of them have been raising their media profile in ways which are very strategic, commissioning very prime ministerial-looking photo shoots, you know, having quite chummy relationships with key journalists in the media who can make their case. But you never know with the Conservative Party. There's always room for a dark horse to surprise everybody, come out on top. And it's a saying in politics, he who wields the knife will never wear the crown. That's why I think you're seeing a certain amount of caginess from these would-be leadership contenders. They don't want to be too close to Johnson, but they don't want to be seen betraying him either.
All right. So, and this is the other potential challenger. Tom, who will follow on from Prime Minister Boris Johnson?
Well, at the moment, there does seem to be this sort of these two candidates who are potentially out in front. Of course, Rishi Sunak, the person who became Chancellor of the Exchequer in charge of the finances of the United Kingdom just 2 years ago, has rocketed to political stardom after he rolled out what was called the furlough scheme in the UK, giving out cash to people so that they could freeze their jobs during the coronavirus pandemic. He was seen as a big spending chancellor during the crisis, and that has potentially smoothed over a lot of the problems that we could have had, and we've got pretty high employment, and the economy has done all right over the last 2 years. So he's built up a bit of a base there, but he's annoyed a number of Conservatives because he's raised taxes as a result of these 2 years. So potentially he's someone who's more popular and might be the head choice, but maybe the heart choice might be Liz Truss, someone who's much more libertarian, believes in a small government, wants to get rid of a number of government departments, wants to reduce
You're hedging your bets, but you're giving us who you think might be there out there in the field. Ash and Tom and Niamh, thank you so much for helping us unpack the politics with your punditry about Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Have a look here on my laptop at aljazeera.com. Boris Johnson has his own page of stories. You can keep up to date with aljazeera.com and Al Jazeera, of course, always. Thanks for watching. Thanks, Ash. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Niamh. You could do a whole show on who would be the next British Prime Minister and then just sort of gamify that and see who might be it. Do you think that the Chancellor of the Exchequer, do you think the UK is ready for a South Asian Prime Minister?
I think that we're actually more than ready. Yeah.